This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. First up this hour, should Malaysia consider leaving the Commonwealth?
And then on Today on Twitter, Rina Harun is trending.
So join the conversation and let us know what you think. That number to call is 7733-2900. You can send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming your way on the Evening Edition. It is 5:07. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. First up, a rather simple question with a complicated backstory. Should Malaysia leave the Commonwealth?
Complicated indeed. Some might say decades long, 60 years long perhaps. So on Sunday, Gopeng MP Dr. Lee Boon Chye wrote a Facebook post calling for a re-evaluation of Malaysia's role in the Commonwealth. And this came following the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. So Dr. Lee's argument was that Malaysia ought to be building international relationships on other platforms, for instance, the UN, ASEAN, and said how the very existence of the Commonwealth legitimizes colonization. And I think this is an argument that has been brought up before, and I think a particularly interesting time to talk about, given that this whole idea of the legacy of Queen Elizabeth and how that might be evolving has been coming up a lot lately.
So there was a rebuttal, as you would expect. Dr. T. Ching Sing, MCA's International Communication and Diplomacy Bureau chairperson, argues that participation in intergovernmental organizations like the Commonwealth is the baseline prerequisite for any sovereign nation to build diplomatic ties with the global partner. He also said that, well, you know, Malaysia is also involved on with other organizations on other levels, member of the UN, also ASEAN, APEC, UNESCO. He also made the argument that Commonwealth members share economic partnership, reciprocal tariffs, financial assistance, knowledge exchange, and visa-free privileges for certain members, among others. So that, I think, that last part in particular is an important point, because one of the issues that gets raised, I think, whenever this question of Commonwealth membership comes up is what's in it for us? So we've been part of it for a long time, even though some other former colonies have chosen not to be, while some others who were never colonized have wanted to be. So the question of the use or the, fundamentally the practicality, the use, the what do we get out of itness of the Commonwealth is one that has come up a number of times. And like you rightly point out, the timing is ripe for that revisit now, because it really was something that it really was something that Queen Elizabeth championed.
So really, what is in it for us, right? Because I think it's also a question of is what we're getting out of this relationship worth the, in some ways, baggage of the memory of colonization, of this odd tie to a power. There was a power imbalance when it started. Some might argue that might still exist. And honestly, the idea of the Commonwealth also has evolved so much, because as it stands now, membership to the modern Commonwealth doesn't even require you to have been part of the former British Empire. This took a little bit of research, but so far, only two member countries have withdrawn from the Commonwealth. Ireland in 1949, no big surprise there. Zimbabwe in 2003, but they've since reapplied to join. So it almost seems like one of those things where I may not get too much from staying, but I don't lose anything by it either. So I don't know how much of this actually just comes down to ideology.
Yeah, ideology and philosophy in some ways. So we'd like to hear from you. What do you think? Should Malaysia leave the Commonwealth? This is a suggestion from Dr. Lee Boon Chye. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp, or send us a voice note at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be joined by Boon Nagara, geopolitical consultant and honorary fellow at the Perak Academy, so keep it here, BFM 89.9. It is 5:12. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila, and we're exploring a suggestion made today by Dr. Lee Boon Chye for the re-evaluation of Malaysia's role in the Commonwealth. This is, of course, following the recent passing of Queen Elizabeth II. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think? Should Malaysia leave the Commonwealth or at least reevaluate our role in it? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to discuss this, Boon Nagara, geopolitical consultant and honorary fellow at the Perak Academy. Boon, good to have you with us.
Welcome.
So firstly, let's start with this. What is the purpose of the Commonwealth? Why was it first formed?
Well, originally it was called the British Commonwealth of Nations, was officially established in 1931, in the period of decolonization. This was to include the former British colonies and territories with Britain in order to continue friendly relations and, you know, the links that have been established since then. Since then, of course, until today, it has undergone several changes and it's become something more modern and up-to-date compared to what it was before.
Could you walk us through how it works? Did we automatically become a part of the Commonwealth, and what does that membership entail?
Well, originally, it was not really compulsory, obligatory to be members upon independence. But it depends on individual countries once they have achieved their full sovereignty. So there is really no cost or obligation now to become a member. In fact, some members today of the 56 or so countries that are in the Commonwealth, not all of them have been colonies of Britain before. Some have applied to join because there are advantages to it. Some of them have even been former French colonies. They see clear advantages and no cost to joining. Then, of course, with certain changes as we've gone along, such as, for example, when India obtained independence in 1947, and Pakistan as well, it was all right. They were, they were members. And then in 1949, India decided to become a republic. So this was, something that would brush up against having the sovereign, the British Queen at the time, as the head of the Commonwealth and so on. So until today, only a minority of members have the British monarch as the head of state. It's not compulsory. It's something that is no longer a main feature, in fact. So in 1949, there was a new law that was passed by which members need not have any, recognition of the British Crown or the British government as effectively heading the Commonwealth. Although it is basically in name and in symbolic kind of a position, which really doesn't mean much. Then, of course, later years, such as 1971, there were agreements among members to have, greater equality among all members, including Britain. Until today, the Commonwealth really is no longer called the British Commonwealth of Nations, named to the Commonwealth of Nations, and now just the Commonwealth, by which all members, including Britain, are all equal. So the purpose then is now to promote friendships and links that are helpful to business and education. So the Commonwealth today is being modernized continually. And of course, with the new King Charles III, it will continue to do so.
So what you mentioned, I think, a few things, including the establishing of friendships, business ties. What are the most direct or perhaps most tangible benefits to being a Commonwealth nation?
Well, being a member implies links among all members, including Britain, on both the government and non-governmental levels. Among the principles of membership are good governance within each member country, and also to promote the spirit of friendship among all members, as well as, there are advantages like British scholarships, study and research scholarships, especially at postgraduate level in British universities. Currently, there are about 800 scholarships every year being offered to member countries, and the number is growing every year. And these scholarships need not be limited to any particular set of areas of study. There's a wide area, but also there is an emphasis on subjects which are helpful to national development. So these research and study scholarships benefit not just the recipients individually on a personal level, but also their countries in terms of national development. So the purpose is multifarious. You know, it is to help individuals, especially those who cannot afford to further their study in British universities, and also to help their countries in terms of development. In addition, there's also the Commonwealth Games, as you know, every 4 years, which, you know, comprising 50-plus countries, do help to develop the standard of sports in each country. Plus, of course, the principles of good governance, especially for the development of civil society in member countries, that also helps in social development of these countries.
So how do you think our relationship with the Commonwealth has evolved and changed over time, especially as we continue to come to terms with the legacy of being a former British colony?
Well, when we were a colony, there were, of course, disadvantages and costs involved. But you know, that's in the past. What's done, it's done. And now I think in order to look forward, it's good to have all these countries together within a fraternity to develop positive links and also to exchange ideas and on development especially, and how they can best safeguard their national prerogatives as sovereign nations. In the case of Malaysia, from the beginning, we never actually recognized the British sovereign or the British monarchs as the head of state, because we didn't have to. We have our own monarchical system. We have our sultans and our Yang Dipertuan Agong. And so this was not an issue. But upon independence in 1957, Malaysia had the highest court of the land of our country, being the Privy Council in London. That changed again over time until in the 1980s, around the mid-1980s, the highest court in Malaysia was no longer in London, but our Supreme Court at the time. Then in the 1990s, the Supreme Court changed its name to the Federal Court until today. So as a member, Malaysia and the countries like it are fully sovereign and independent, but we reap the benefits of membership without additional costs or obligations. So it's a plus as a member.
How do you think the death of Queen Elizabeth will impact the future and status of the Commonwealth?
Well, a lot depends on the new sovereign, the new monarch, King Charles III. And my expectation is that things are likely to improve for member countries of the Commonwealth. Unlike previous, or more than previous generations of British monarchs, Charles now is the most, I think, most progressive, most internationally connected, best educated on many global issues. And he has already been described as the most Muslim-friendly British monarch. Not only that, I think he's most sympathetic compared to previous monarchs towards the interests and cause of the developing world, as well as the global south. So I think we can expect certain progressive changes to come under King Charles III.
So all of this comes, or rather this conversation has been reopened through a Facebook post by Dr. Lee Boon Chye, where he brought up the damage that the British Empire has had on member countries, mainly when it comes to issues around race and religion and divisive policies. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously there were some of these disadvantages, setbacks and costs involved when we were a colony. But, you know, that's in the past, as I said, decades ago. And now we are fully sovereign and independent. And being a member of the Commonwealth gives us certain benefits and advantages that non-members do not have. That's why new countries tend to apply for membership. Those that have been ejected before, like South Africa, because of apartheid, and that was mainly because Malaya at the time, under Tunku Abdul Rahman, campaigned heavily against apartheid in South Africa. And after the end of apartheid in South Africa, the country applied to join the Commonwealth and it became a member again. The first black president, Nelson Mandela, was a very close personal friend of the Queen. And of course, relations developed in preserving friendships. So I think what's in the past, it should not be confused with what can be in the future, which is much more positive. And in the present, I think we are all set to receive some of these developments and changes to come.
Now, having said that, there have been countries that have left the Commonwealth in the past. Can you talk to us about some of the factors that led up to those decisions and how they're actually negotiated when people say, OK, I'm leaving?
Well, one of the cases of a country that left was Ireland. And I believe it was in 1949. And this was because an extreme nationalist group in Ireland, Sinn Féin, took over the government at the time. And they managed to persuade the majority of people there to leave. So it has not tried to rejoin. Other countries that have left have tried to rejoin. In the case of Pakistan, like Zimbabwe, they were actually pushed out because of internal problems, either a military coup or some extreme forms of violence that were not acceptable to Commonwealth members. But they have since applied to join, and Pakistan is already there. So I think in the case of Malaysia, if a country like Malaysia were to leave, there is no gain benefit in being a non-member. In fact, the advantages would be of a member would be lost. So I think the whole world is now globalizing with greater integration and interrelations, and it would be good to promote friendships and links, whereas a withdrawal would mean probably a descent into deeper local politics of race and religion, of not being able to converse and communicate internationally, especially in the English language. Because member countries of the Commonwealth converse in English commonly. And as a result, I think the problems that we have locally, internally, because of our domestic politics, could multiply rather than be mitigated by more international links.
Boon, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, I think the new monarch in Britain should, I think, and probably would improve the terms of membership. And more Commonwealth members could be coming at the end of the day. So I think it would be apparently more attractive to become a member, even for those countries that were never colonies of Britain before. So, we can watch that space and expect changes to come.
Boon, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
That was Boon Nagara, geopolitical consultant and honorary fellow at the Perak Academy, talking about the Commonwealth in many ways and where we fit into that. This is coming as Gopeng MP Dr. Lee Boon Chye recently wrote a Facebook post asking for the re-evaluation of our role in the Commonwealth following, of course, the recent passing of Queen Elizabeth II. And we've been asking you, what do you think? Should Malaysia leave the Commonwealth? You can call us 7733 2900. You can send us a voice note or a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And now, rather appropriately, we're going to be asking the same question, but in song form. Here's The Clash with Should I Stay or Should I Go? BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.